Good morning and welcome to A Chat in the Garden with Monique A.J. Smith, where Sniffings Blooms, right here in A Chat in the Garden. And I'm glad to be here with you on mid-July, and got a couple of announcements to make. One of which is that if you're one of the individuals who like to binge listen or binge watch on Netflix, I invite you to listen to season 1 through 5. I call it the 200 plus interviews with women of color in athletic and sports business. Now, I'm giving you an incentive, 50% off. 50% off, but the 50% won't be there always. You don't. Nobody on the podcast is probably from Waverly, but there was a store that always say the sale was on. The sale was on. He always had a sale. Well, my sale is not going to last forever. Okay, so you need to take advantage of it now. So go to 200 plus expert, and use the code GARDEN. Use the GARDEN. And it's interesting because I know many of you all have really kind of just joined listening to the podcast, and I had someone to give me a list of individuals that they thought would be really great to be a guest on the podcast. And I was like, oh, she's already been on. So just go check it out. And I think that you will be really surprised. Because, again, we've been on, we were ending our sixth season this month, but we have uploaded season 1 through 5. And why that's really important is because the links that you have now will expire at the end of this month. So I want you not to even feel a difference, okay? And we're really proud of what we've been able to bring to you for the last 6 years. We want to continue to bring it to you and those who are just joining in. And so it's twofold, for those who want to hear their friends and those who want to get that career advice. And that's one of the main things whenever I have a young person to connect with me, what is your advice for? And I always tell them, it's not just me you get advice from. That's why we create this podcast, just for two reasons, to be able to share the career path of other women of color in athletic and business, but also so that when opportunities come about, people can experience the thought process of our guests, and they can increase their pipeline of women of color. Again, I've been in the business for at least 32 years, and, you know, I shall not hear or accept that we don't have any qualified candidates. We don't know where to find them. And that has been my goal, and that's why we do have men in the garden who are listening, so that they can find and be exposed to where significance blooms. Because we are significant. We're not just successful. We make impact. And that's what you hear about in the garden. Speaking about making impact, I don't know if you watched the Facebook Live last night, but I had the co-founder of Behind the Whistle, Lizette Goodlow. And they are getting ready for the symposium that takes place this Friday and Saturday. And we talked about, hey, the title being called what? The Schema. And I was like, what in the world is that? So I was educated. Okay, Schema is a plan. And they want this conference to be one that you come up with a plan. It's called Attack with a Plan. And when they said what we're attacking, I said the isms. You know, she said when they were planning, this is their third conference. When they were planning this, it was, you know, we weren't in COVID-19. And so when COVID-19 and then the racial unrest is again made a reason to dive deep until they said, okay, we're going to virtual. Let's really go dive deep with some phenomenal people. And this is what I've been saying, and she said it last night. If you are a sports management major, you have seen these names in your textbooks. And so if you join them, you get a chance to hear them and be able to ask them questions. Dr. Emmett Gill, Dr. Alika Carter Van Zink, Dr. Joseph Cooper. It's another good friend is Dr. Brandon Jones, and he's at University of Texas, and he has been a veteran of the program. So is Dr. Carter Van Zink, and I'm just telling you, you don't want to miss this, and it gives you a different perspective of things that you just may not have been paying attention to. To be very honest with you, because we got our to-do list. And because three of the four have a sociology background, it would be coming from a lens of where your student-athletes are coming from and kind of helping you how to respond to some of the actions they do see. And it did change my perspective. I've been listening to them and for about, I'm going to say about 4 or 5 years now. And it definitely does give you a new perspective of how we should, to be honest, the curriculum that we prepare, not just, that's what's called behind the whistle, not just blowing the whistle. And honestly, and not just relying on the support people in athletics. If you're a coach, you do need to be aware of some of the reactions to your student athletes and possibly having a Rolodex in your mind of that probably is occurring because of. So, again, we have some guard members also presenting. I'm really excited about hearing them. It's Brittany Collins, Latrice Sales, who also used to work for the NCAA, but now works for the Jackie Joyner Kersee Foundation. I understand she's going to be talking about some opportunities there. You don't want to miss that. And Jody Grevy, we were talking about Jody's actually my client, and I said, how many people, raise on your finger, do you know who climbed Mount Kilimanjaro and has a background in coaching? And so she takes that experience, because she got your attention when she says, you know, she climbed it, okay? And then you're like, okay, why'd you climb it? How'd you climb it? And then it's really interesting because it keeps you from thinking about that you can't do something. So it's always about possibilities. And everybody has a certain mountain that they think they can't climb. So that's going to be interesting. So today is Wednesday. Today is the last day to register. So make sure you register at behindthewhistle.net. Now, I told her that the majority of her attendees are going to be from the garden. Please don't make a lie out of me. So go ahead and invest. Invest in some tools that you probably would not be familiar with. Oh, there is another thing that I learned last night during our Facebook Live, that she's got two attorneys. One attorney to talk about the likeness piece that the NCAA is pondering and how that will fare, and so he's an attorney, and another attorney is going to talk about the social activist part of helping our student athletes to do that and their rights. And what did she say? She said something about how to engage authorities to assist your student athletes, which I think is very key. It's very key. I mean, I understand, you know, and we had the conversation that have you had the talk, and how early is it to have the talk with authorities? And so, honestly, this is why this is so key, is because you're going to come away with actually strategies to assist you to be a better athletic administrator on your campus, even if you're on campus through Zoom. You know, there is something to be said about the emotions that people have and the response they have and where they got their responses from. And if you continuously watch what's been going on, you will have a reaction that you don't even know that you had in you. And we need to allow them to have those type of responses in a safe environment. So I do believe that all of these presenters will assist you and come up with some strategies to do what needs to be done in this time such as this. So Behind the Whistle, go to register at behindthewhistle.net. You know, I'm all about resources, and I am totally concerned for my student athletes who were about to embark upon their senior football season. And I'm going to have to reach out to him, be honest with you, because his whole mindset was going to the league, and he's going to think that he can't go to the league, and he's not going to think about, oh, now is the time to really get your grades up and to help plan for your next, just in case that doesn't work out for you. But I'm going to listen to these tools I'm going to get from Behind the Whistle how about saying that, so it won't seem as like I'm brushing off what his dreams are. And so usually, you know, with my student athletes who wish to go professional, I always suggest this resource. Also, my students who want to be sports agents, because today sports agents are not just the people who do the contract. It's the people who do the PR, handle their personal finance, even their real estate. So surviving the lights, a professional athlete's playbook to avoid the curse by Tawana Smith is my go-to resource. Tawana Smith has got great peer commentary, because sometimes, you know, we can say something that just won't click, but when they hear or see or someone else that looks like them say these things, it makes it stick with them. And, you know, some of the things that there's normal, like you want people that's going to have your back no matter what, but they may have your back, but just not have the knowledge of how to go about doing that. And how you would do it in one scenario is not how you do it on the professional side. So Surviving the Lights, a professional athlete's playbook to avoid the curse, is on Amazon on 3 different formats. And, you know, hey, we're in a listing era, so yeah, she got it on audiobook. She's got it on ebook, so you can read it on your phone. And, of course, she has it in paperback. So make sure that you gather this resource. It is excellent. And, again, I said this before, endorsement comes from the NFL. They purchase all of the books for the Celebration Bowl attendees, well, the two teams that were participating. And so if they thought this was a great resource, you should too. Dr. Chico Carwell is taking a break this week, but he will be back in the lab presenting some material, and this talking about improving opportunities and outcomes for black male college athletes. And Dr. Carwell is one that will take books and research to make his presentations. And, you know, he still is a success culture consultant, but he knows that, you know, if you can't stay relevant for what people need, then you're just talking, just to be talking, not to be heard. And so July the 30th is when he'll be back on board with that. So to sign up for that, and that is free, successcultureconsultantcoach.com. Successcultureconsultantcoach.com. And you can register for that, and that's for next Thursday, June 30th. Now, I have a couple of things talking about workshops. That's one of the things that, to be honest with you, that's what I usually be doing at this time of year. And so I'm still doing it, but I'm doing it virtually. I have been blessed to do a virtual workshop for Lincoln University's, I believe it was it wasn't athletics per se, it was the internship, the young people internship in health. So it was like a assistant dean. And I really enjoyed that. And I, for that group, I did Grow Your Who. And so it was very interactive and helping the individuals to see that you actually know the people that you already know now to help you get where you want to be. And we do really do have to kind of walk them through this because there is this fear of, yes, I finished, I'm about to graduate, my internships are canceled. I got students, their internships were canceled, and they're just depleted, okay? And so we have to give them some kind of hope. And, you know, this virtual piece is great. And then you can actually practice with them in different areas and help them see. See, that's the key. You got to help them see the possibilities to give them that hope that all is not lost, okay? And then I did do one for Langston University. They did purchase my book called ThePublicFigureMask.com for their female student athletes, and we discussed being a first and the pressures that may come along with that, which are very similar to them because, again, this is a first for them to experience this pandemic. And how do you keep a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset? And that is going to be the difference. Those who see this crisis as an opportunity are going to fare better than those that it's not going to get any better. And we as educators have to help to develop that mindset. And that's one of my signature workshops that I do. And I did that for the ACC, for the SIAC. And then I also, you know, do what I do with women. So the IUPUI brought me to work with their women's staff. Also, I had three times I went to Winthrop University to work with their women. Again, the growth mindset is like the key piece. I also do communications. I do this using birds, and that really allows people to remember that. And when I do it with student athletes, it's interesting. I have them to try to name the communication style of their coach, and they really love that. And I have incorporated a little, I don't know, I think the Newlywed Game has been rebroadcasted with a new host. But when I was a kid, they had the Newlywed Game. And so the spouse would try to see if they knew or remembered what was important to them. And so I have that now. I have a Newlywed Game. But I have a different title, apparently, for coaches. So we can really see, do they know? And I think I do it with about the recruits. Because that's the key, especially today, do you know your student athletes? And this is a perfect time to learn them through the Zoom format or whatever format you use. And you know what I like about it? Because I can actually look at each child's eyes to be able to see if they get it. So I'm really looking to continue to do what I love to do virtually. If you're looking for programming, something to engage your student athletes or your staff, please contact me, and I'd be really glad to do that, really glad to do that. And again, if you have not purchased my book, or my story, it's an anthology, publicfiguremask.com is where you get that. So now comes the time to bring on my guest, and I'm hoping that she is here. And here's the interesting thing. I've known this young lady for a very long time, and I've never had one-on-one. And so guess what? You're about to listen in on our one-on-one conversation. And by me looking, getting ready for today, I didn't realize how long she has been at the NCA. So she has been there for over a decade and some change. And so she's Director of Academic and Membership Affairs. Welcome to the garden, Shauna Cobb. Shauna?
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. You hear your cheers?
Yeah, I did. I love it.
Yes. You had a look. That's for the cheers for the home run. Bing boom. You know.
I love it. I love it. That's the most applause I've gotten all year.
Yes. Yes. So, welcome to the garden, dear. I have known you for so long, but we've never had a one-on-one conversation. So everybody's going to be listening in on our chat.
I'm very happy to be here, and I can't believe after all these years, this really is our first time actually sitting down and chatting with one another.
Isn't that something? So just to start from the beginning, from your college to your current position, take us through that journey.
From college to my current position, okay, so I spent 6 years at Clemson University in Clemson, South Carolina. I did my undergrad and grad work there, and as an undergrad student, I worked as a student athletic trainer. Mm. So I spent 4 years in the training room. Shout out to all the athletic trainers out there, putting in long hours and getting little to no recognition. Shout out to that crew. So after I finished my time in the training room, I wasn't yet sure what I wanted to do, and the head trainer at the time said, well, go upstairs and talk to Linda White, who is the senior woman administrator at Clemson. And Linda White says, well, I have a grad assistantship that I will pay you to go to school, and I'll pay you hourly, and you can come work for me. And I was like, that sounds like a great deal. So I worked for Linda for a year, and then my second year of grad school, she says, well, you can stay here, and we can continue to do this, or you can go down the hall and work in compliance. I looked at her, and I said, what's compliance? What do they do? I had no idea what that was. So I looked at the previous GAs in compliance that all got jobs after working for Becky Bowman, and I said, well, I'll go down there and work for Becky because apparently I'll get a job after I spend a year with her. So spent a year learning compliance and what that was, and after that, then I ended up at Georgia Tech. And I spent 2.5 years doing compliance at Georgia Tech. There was some administration changes. We had a new AD coming in. My boss left. And I was like, I don't really want to stay here without my people. So then I moved to Virginia Tech. And I spent 3 years working at Virginia Tech, again, doing compliance, but I got promoted. So my last title there was Assistant AD for Compliance. And to just give a little background as to how your interactions with people are so important, when I worked at Georgia Tech, I oversaw our grant and aid program and national letter of intent program, which means I had to work real closely with the ACC office. Well, at the time at the ACC office, I was working really closely with Amy Huckthausen. By the time I got to Virginia Tech and spent 2.5 years at Virginia Tech, Amy Huckthausen was now working at the NCAA. And she called me once and said, hey, are you interested in coming to work here? And I was like, no, I'm good. She called me the second year and said, hey, have you considered coming to work at the NCAA? Yeah, no, I'm good. The third time she called me, I was like, don't be a fool. Let's hear what she has to say. So ended up coming out to Indianapolis for an interview, and Amy hired me. It was a real quick process, but that was just on our interaction with me working at Georgia Tech and her being at the ACC office. She thought enough about me to think that I would be a good colleague at the NCAA. And, of course, Amy's now the commissioner of the America East Conference. So we both have progressed in our careers. And that's what took me to the NCAA. And I got here in 2009, April of 2009. I was supposed to be here for 3 years, and it's now been 11, going on 12. And I've had changes in my plate since I got here. I came in originally doing a lot of interpretations because I spent time on campus. I worked with our compliance assistant program because I did that on campus too. And with having a really good mentor here and folks who invested in me, I shifted and began to focus on the academics in Division I. And through that, I started working with academic policy and legislation and then ended up in my current role now as a director, where I have oversight of the Bylaw 14 team. So Bylaw 14 is the NCAA bylaw that governs and manages and legislates academics for student-athletes, so their academic requirements to ensure that they're graduating. And I also oversee the data operations of academics. So when you hear data reviews and APR, and folks have to submit their numbers every year, they have to submit their data, I oversee the folks that do that work. I also get to serve as liaison to two Division I committees. So I work with the Committee on Academics, which oversees the academic policy and legislation for Division I. And I also serve as a liaison to the Division I Strategic Vision and Planning Committee, which is one of the council standing committees. So my plate has diversified a little bit. I also oversee the Regional Rules Program, which is essentially continuing ed for compliance folks every year. So I've got a pretty diverse plate that works well for me.
Wow. All I can say is wow. and one of the wows is that I can say I went to the very first Regional Rules workshop. Yeah, and this is the funny thing. It was so new. We're talking about the assistant program. And that's how I became AD, because I'm not saying I was nosy, but when things came in, back then it was a fax. So something would roll out, and, you know, and there was not sheet of paper, you know.
Yep.
So it would roll up on the floor, and the fax machine was in my office. And so I saw we had a violation. I was like, okay, ooh, we got a violation. Ooh. Oh. And so I went in the book and said, okay, what did the violation, and this is what we should have done. So interesting enough, I got a colleague who didn't necessarily work in athletics but was one of those analytical kind of people. And I said, in the book, there's this spreadsheet. Can you make one of these? It was a squad list. Can you make one? Because apparently we're not doing this. And he said, "What? Well, are you sure they haven't sent you anything?" I said, "No, I don't know. Can you make one?" And he said, "Yeah." So he made one because he worked in the business office, right? And then, girl, when I tell you this was so funny, because he thinks he's like a, I guess, the horse whisperer of mail. I got mailed these gigantic floppy disks, the big black things with the big circle in the middle.
With the hole in the middle, yep.
Yes, that was the squad list. And I gave it to him, and I was like, yeah, this is what it is. And he said, I told you. I said, it wasn't here before. I just got it, okay? And honestly, that began my consulting. Because I knew if I didn't know what to do with it, I knew my colleagues didn't either. But this little, and he's almost 50 years old now, I want to call him that. But he was like one of those, I'm watching Suits now. So he's like one of the guys on Suits who can just got a memory and can figure it out. I said, well, here, you figure it out, then tell me. And to hear that you're over that, it's just so... It is so interesting. And before I get to the questions, I do want to ask this question here. I see, because I'm in Virginia. were you there when Michael Vick was there?
No, I was after Michael Vick. I got to Virginia Tech in 2006, and I was actually after Marcus, too. So Marcus finished, I believe, the year before I got there.
All right. Were you there in 2008?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, I came to Virginia Tech in 2008. I gave the award away to the softball young lady, the Honda award to her. And
we had a picture that was really good.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
She was really good.
And so she got the Honda award, and I was on the Honda committee.
Okay.
Girl, I thought I had to take when I tell you, it was just so shocking that to come out my hotel room and there was a cow. Now, I grew up in the country now, but I just wasn't used to cows being right outside the hotel room.
Cows and ducks and everything else.
Yes, right there. I was like, oh, my God.
Yep.
I had just had back surgery, so my husband was going to let me go by myself. But plus, he's a Virginia Tech person, you know. I mean,
mm-hmm.
so he was all
mm-hmm.
excited. But this is what I want to say. We're talking about women and supporting women and whatnot. Virginia Tech had me give the award away at a football game for a softball young lady. Now, that was impressive to me. So
yeah, that says a lot. That says a lot.
Yeah, it does. And then, so I'm on the football field and giving her the award. And they put on the big screen, I guess I've never seen this before, too, a softball jersey or something, the unveiling. So the screen went to that, and they hung her jersey up. So that was impressive to me. And that's kind of inclusiveness
mm-hmm.
that we need to have in today's world.
Yep.
So just hats off to you. Okay, so questions. You ready?
Yes, ma'am. Let's do it.
Denise Lavallee, I don't know what this means, says, I miss Jack's coconuts. What's that?
Cronuts.
What's that?
It is a glazed croissant. So imagine you have a croissant and you glaze it over like a donut, and Jack's, They used to call them cronuts, but now there's a trademark from a donut shop in New York, so they cannot call them cronuts. They now just call them glazed croissants, but they are little slices of heaven.
Okay. And you get these where?
At Jack's Donuts, right downtown Indianapolis.
Oh, okay. Okay, because I know she was from New Orleans, and I just could not understand the connection.
You
here.
Couldn't make that connection.
Well, no, I was like, okay, the Jacksons? I mean, what? Okay, all right.
Denise served on the Committee on Academics, so when she would come to town for her committee meetings, she made a point of going over to Jack's Donuts, which happens to be about four doors down from me, to get her a cronut or a glazed croissant.
Okay. Well, I'm blessed to have her at Hampton University and glad she's here.
Yes, ma'am.
And I call her the award-winning APR queen. That's what I call her.
She knows it well. She knows
yes,
it well.
Yes, she does. So she says, what was the one key factor that made your decision to serve at the national office versus on campus?
You know, when I made the move to the national office, originally, I didn't even think about leaving campus. So where I was at Virginia Tech was my boss wasn't going anywhere, and I didn't have any potential opportunity for growth. I knew that I'd reached my ceiling there. He wasn't going to leave. I wasn't going to get the opportunity to get my hands into other areas in the department because our AD at the time was really focused on you do this job and I'm keeping you in this box.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't real big on diversifying plates and allowing opportunities to do other things within the department. So I knew mm-hmm. my growth was stifled there. I also knew that my boss wasn't one who was encouraging me to explore other areas too. So I read that writing on the wall very clearly and knew that it was time for me to get out. And so it was really divine intervention that Amy called me a third time to ask if I'd be interested in coming to the NCAA. So initially, there was nothing that that triggered my decision to leave campus to come to the national office, but I can tell you what's kept me there is knowing that I'm doing work that impacts every student athlete in Division One. So I tell young people now when I talk to them that when I was on campus, you know, I had 500 student athletes that were mine. And now you multiply that times so many numbers, those are the students who I impact now. And when you see academic changes happening and you see policy changes and you know that I'm doing something that impacts every student in the division, that's impactful. And for me, that's what drives and what says, you know, as we approach our work every day, just realize the implications that this has on every student that plays sports in Division One. And I think that's what's kept me at the national office, even if it's not what drew me there or drew me here initially.
Wow. Well, you just kind of answered the next question, which is from Kendra Green, North Carolina A&T. What's the most rewarding aspect of working at the national office? So you kind of already answered that one. So I'm going to go to this one that you're not prepared for. This one came in after I sent you the script. Okay. Cherise Parker. All right. All right.
Hey, this is girl, Cherise.
Yeah.
Hey, Ms. Parker.
She's a AD in Chicago. Don't know. I can't remember the name of the school, but I'm so proud of her. Really proud of her. She attended one of my leadership retreats. So here we go.
Okay.
With the current climate of heightened social justice, do you believe you have had to provide additional guidance as a director of the NCAA member, staff, colleague, on matters pertaining to inclusivity, which is kind of what I just said about softball and football. Didn't realize that, but yeah.
So do I feel a responsibility to do it at the national office? Is that the question?
Yeah, she kind of said it three ways, as director of the NCAA, a staff member, or a colleague. So I guess, and I think I put in my notes, as a high-profile position, you know, do you feel additional guidance? Do you think you need to, I guess, you know, some people have say, let it play out. That's not my role, you know, and do you, you know, like how would this, it's something like when I was talking about this behind the whistle. You know, I mean, there's some areas that you don't even think that you have anything to do with the sociology of it. But knowing, I think probably being on a college campus, you've seen the behaviors of student athletes. And, you know, shoot, Virginia Tech is an interesting place.
Sure is, sure is.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm from Virginia. So, UVA and Virginia Tech are one that have a staple in this area. And I'm going to say this. When I was in college, Governor Wilder became the very first African-American male to become a governor of a southern state.
Yep.
And that was 1990. And one of the first things he did was to change the Virginia song. Because he said, we ain't carrying nobody back to no old nothing. And so I guess that's the kind of thing that she is alluding to. But I guess, you know, with all the unrest, you know, the discussions, are there any type of policies, anything that you have weighed in on to assist? Let's talk about, I think it's championships, which is not your area. See, that's the point I think she's trying to make. It's not your area, but they have expanded the flag situation.
Yep. So I think that's a really good question, and it's one that I think is interesting because a lot of times folks don't necessarily realize, to the point you just made, that we are so siloed at the national office. So championship does their thing, and absent needing to know who has the ability and the opportunity to participate, so are they eligible to participate in championships? We don't do a lot of weighing in and cross-functional things if it's not pertaining to the eligibility to participate in a championship. But I think that what's important, especially as we talk about these social justice issues, is to make the impact where you can, right? So as we have conversations and we're talking about, you know, now all of a sudden campuses are changing how they're operating this fall due to the pandemic. And campuses are now required to have someone who's focused primarily on diversity. It's how does the work that I do, how can I impact those areas? And how do those areas impact the work that I do? So it's recognition, right, that we have a lot of students of color who are participating in college athletics. And are we so hell-bent on having a cookie-cutter requirement for everything that that's what's best for everything? You know, you think about the opportunities that athletics presents to young people, especially first-generation, especially young people of color who may not have the opportunity based on whatever reason. This is a pathway to opportunity, right? And so it's having conversations about, are we in the right place with what we're requiring student-athletes to have? And are we in the right place with the requirements to, you know, to get in and to stay in? And is that the right place to be? Are the APR requirements, are they in the right place based on, again, the mission of the university, the mission of the NCAA? And I think that it's important to have conversations about those things where you are to see how they're impacted and how you can influence from where you are. Because I don't have a lot of say in what, or any say in what goes on in championships, but as we talk about the academic requirements for young people coming into school, that's where I can have impact. And it's, let's talk about the SAT. Let's talk about how it can be perceived and has been demonstrated that it can be culturally biased. So are we in the right place in requiring testing for admissions and for participation in college athletics? Let's have those conversations. So it's a little about being intentional about your areas of influence and recognizing those, right? And in those areas where I have influence, it's making sure that I am a voice in the room for the people who don't have a voice. And that I am helping folks to take into consideration the impact on all demographics of people. And, you know, it's a heavy load to bear to feel like I got to carry the weight for all of my people, but I got to carry the weight for all of my people. And as we have those conversations, it's making sure that people are taking that into account.
And I think that was really key, because if you don't use your voice where you have influence, you're just part of the noise. You understand? Like, if you just join the bandwagon. But if you can use your voice in key manners for influence and impact, even though people didn't know you did it, then you can sleep at night. And I think people need to embrace that, because you'll feel guilty. You let other people make you feel guilty about something when you already know that you may impact, and you know the things that you put in place, the words that you said on committee, the influence that you change a mindset, a person's vote for something, only the people in that room are going to know. And you know what? Have you watched Hamilton?
Yeah, saw it live and watched it on Disney Plus. Yes, ma'am.
So the song, the verse, it says something about being in the room when it happened, the room when it happened.
Yes. Yep. Burr wanted to be in the room. Burr wanted to make sure he was a part of the conversation.
Yeah. And so you're part of the conversation, but other people don't know what happened, but you do. Now, hopefully in life, I'm trying to encourage everyone to write a book, all right, that you can talk about those experiences during your twilight time.
During the twilight time.
No, I'm serious, because
like
it'll be very interesting.
I like that.
Yeah. This is what I do, girl. I plant seeds of empowerment to lead others to greatness.
I like
this
that.
Is what I do.
I like that. Walk in it, girl.
I love it. We're going to take a really a short break here in the Chat in the Garden. And when we return, I got one more really interesting question. I cannot wait to get the answer to this.
Oh, goodness. Looking forward to it.
This is Alva Champion Amaker of A&A Athletic Consulting and Vigilant Safety Training Center. My investment to become a member of the Advanced Academy is one of the best decisions I've made in my business and personal growth journey. Working with Monique has provided the network to connect and collaborate with some phenomenal women and leaders, exposed me to literature for growth, and opportunities to share my skill sets and knowledge. Her candid approach in the one-on-one sessions make me more accountable for taking the necessary steps toward my advanced success. Thank you, Monique, and I appreciate you.
Let's face it, the AD position is an executive position. A member of the president's administrative team, the cabinet, the department deserves the same level of leadership, knowledge, talent, experience, and professionalism as any top official on campus. Presidents are looking for AD leadership who know how to build a success culture. Recognizing this changing landscape in athletics, join me at successcultureconsultantcoach.com for info on my next course on building a success culture.
Why do colleges support student athletes pursuing every profession except professional sports? Why are they treated as just students when they're athletes, knowing that they need help surviving the lights? I'm Tawana Smith, and as a former Division I and pro athlete and now best-selling author, I've created a transition system specifically for student athletes called Surviving the Lights. For more information, visit www.survivingthelights.com to learn how we can change the game together.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Monique A.J. Smith, and we are here talking to Ms. Shauna Cobb of the NCAA. So you ready for this next question?
Yes, ma'am. Let's do it.
Renee Edwards of Mississippi Valley State University. Her question is, how was being a competitive double Dutch performer and champion help in your career path? Now, I did not know this. Please elaborate.
Well, first of all, Renee's got a little inside advantage, and I don't know if she told you this, but I started jumping double Dutch competitively when I was in the fourth grade. One of my really good friends and her sister were jumping and competing, and I was like, oh, that looks like fun. And it was free for me to go, and my parents were like, oh, if I don't have to pay for it, yeah, you can definitely go check out this little jump rope thing. And started jumping, competing. We've traveled. At the time, we traveled all over the country. We made it to Canada. We competed. I was on Gullah Gullah Island on Nickelodeon. So I had a national network debut on Gullah Gullah Island. And Renee's godmother was best friends with our coach. So, and we didn't make that connection until many, many, many years later. And I was like, hey, this is your godmother? So she had an inside track to know that I jumped double Dutch with the double Dutch forces out of Columbia, South Carolina, and did that up until I think my last competition was my freshman year in college. So at that point, I got a little busy with football and working in the athletic training room. So I hung my ropes up. And so spent many years doing that. And I think how it helped me in my career is that I can have laser focus when I need it. You know, when you're competing in double Dutch at the time, you have two different areas. So you have a compulsory, which everyone does, which is a compulsory set of steps that everybody has to do, and you get points on that. And then you have a speed portion where for 2 minutes, the jumper has to go as fast as they can. And then you have, I guess there's a third, you have freestyle, which is where you get to be creative and have fun. So you get a minute to do a freestyle routine and, you know, you wow the crowd with that. And to be able to have a laser focus, even for a short period of time, I got 2 minutes to turn these ropes as fast as I can so my teammate can get the highest score possible. I'm able to compartmentalize when I need to. I can block everything else out and focus on this. And I also don't necessarily have to carry that over to the next thing. So if I'm focusing on the work of the Committee on Academics, I can focus on that work. But when I shift over to SVPC, I'm not bringing the Committee on Academics work with me unless I need to reference it, right? So I can compartmentalize and handle a lot of things at once by keeping them in their box and referring to them if I need to. Because if you mess up in a routine and you're like, oh, we lost it because we made a mistake right here, when you get to the next routine, you're starting from there. You don't bring over your mistakes into that next routine. So being able to focus, I think knowing what it feels like to be a member of a team. So my teammates, and we traveled all over, like I said, all over the country. And most of the time we were piled in either my coach's little 300Z, and I don't know if you remember those.
Ooh, that's small.
300Zs. Girl, we would have eight of us packed in there breaking all kind of laws. We sitting on laps. We laying across laps. But that's how we traveled. And then she upgraded to a Maxima, but at the time, this was like a 92 Maxima. So they were real small and boxy. And again, you got eight children piled up in there, lapped up, laying across laps. But we worked together, and that was my first extended teamwork. And just spending time with these kids, and we grew to love one another. We all still stay in touch to this day. Like, that's my family now. But learning how to work together with people from different backgrounds, a lot of the kids who jumped with me came from the what we call the projects in Colombia. Mm-hmm. A lot of them, some of them were raised by grandparents. Some of them, most of them didn't have fathers in the home. I think one of my friends and I were talking not too long ago, and he said, you know, there were only four daddies in that whole group, and my daddy was one of them. He traveled with us. He went to competitions, you know, but we were all so different. But when we put on that uniform, we were a team. And thinking about every day when I come into the office or virtually come into the office now during this pandemic, you know, this is my team. And you learn how to work with people, and you learn how to flex to people's personalities, and what can I do to get the most out of the people that I'm working with. So I learned a lot of that jumping double dip, and I learned what success was like, right? I know how it feels to win what we call the world championship and hold up that trophy, and we are the best. And so knowing how to handle that success too, right? And I can't come across as too arrogant. And I can't assume that because I step on that stage and I won last year that I'm going to win this year. So I got to bring it all the time. So there are a lot of things that I've carried with me since I started jumping double dutch, you know, taking advantage of opportunities to learn new things. I didn't know when you turn two ropes egg beater style that you could jump in the middle of them and not fall and break your neck. But when I did it, I didn't. So it's like, let's try it. Let's try it. See if it works. It might not, but it might. Right? Don't be afraid to try. So you don't think about it when you're in it, right? As a kid, I didn't think I will carry some of these things along with me. But Double Dutch really, really helped set a foundation to allow me to make successful transitions throughout my career.
Oh, wow. I like that. Because that's exactly what you see is transitions when you're watching Double Dutch.
Yep.
Now, again, this is another one of those things that's not in your lane. You may or may not know, but was Double Dutch on the docket to be an emerging sport? Or was it the Olympics?
It was the Olympics.
So okay, right I knew it was somewhere.
90, right around 96, our team, the Forces, did some exhibitions at the Olympics in the Olympic Village. But there are so many countries that have to participate in order to get it introduced as an Olympic sport. And at the time, we were probably six or seven countries that we had that were like, yep, we could field a team. but it never got the momentum, even though, you know, folks, I think folks were pushing for it, but it was definitely trying. They made a hard push to get Double Dutch in the Olympics.
Well, and usually if you see something in the Olympics, you'll see it on the docket. And that's one of the things I was talking about, your level of influence. When we did bowling, I was at Middle Eastern Shore, and I was assigned to bowling. I was like, huh, bowling, a sport, really? But I travel with them. So then when I go to the conference office of the CIAA, and my supervisor says, I need you to speak to the board directors, those are the presidents, and get them to add women's tennis. And I was like, look, I've been an AD. I can't even get males to play tennis, okay? I said, but I got one for you. I said, this bowling thing going to take off. And I said, they need 40 schools to have a national championship. And we make it mandatory for all 12 of ours to be there. We will be there. They will have a national championship. And I guarantee that one of our schools will be there. Girl, I felt like Noah in the Ark, because guess what? Winston-Salem State participated in the very first national championship in 2008. So that's what happens when you use your influence and nobody else knows that you had something to do with it.
Exactly.
So this has been delightful, our first time, our first chat together.
And it better not be our last.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes,
ma'am. Hopefully, I will be invited down to NCA to do some type of workshop, and then you can go to what is it, Cronuts?
Cronuts. Imagine a croissant and a donut makes a.
Ow!
But now they just call them glazed croissants. Glazed croissants.
Cronuts. Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. Wow. So I just want to say thank you so very much for joining me today. I want to thank our engineer, Jamla Harrison of Refine Virtual Solutions, for keeping me on track today. Join us next Wednesday at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time for show updates and podcasts. Join us on Facebook's A Chat in the Garden with Monique A.J. Smith. And have a significant rest of the day.